10-year-old Tianda Bradley was looking after her 3-year-old sister, Diamond, while their mother, Tracy, went to work on the morning of July 6, 2001. The girls were excited for the next day, when they would be celebrating their sister Victoria's birthday. Victoria and their other sister, Rita, weren't at the Chicago apartment that morning, and were instead spending time with their grandmother. Sadly, Tianda and Diamond would never make it to the party. Tracy left the apartment at approximately 6:30 a.m. and returned shortly after noon. Upon her arrival, she found her daughters missing, and a note left behind, allegedly written by Tianda, specified that they were taking a walk to a nearby store and then a school. Tracy notified family members and searched the area for over 5 hours before contacting police, allegedly afraid that Child Protective Services would charge her for leaving the young children home alone. This would be the first of many lies Tracy would tell about the events of that day, leading to much confusion and time loss in the early stages of the investigation. As a result of this behavior, police would become exceedingly suspicious, not only of Tracy, but of George Washington, Diamond's father, and the man who had an on-again, off-again relationship with her. As suspicions grew, Tracy became less cooperative, and a battle would ensue between the mother and the authorities and the media. Over the course of the next 17 years, there would be many new leads, dead ends, frustrations, and subtle accusations. No suspect has ever been named, and yet there are curious details related to hairs found in a van, an extremely important voicemail which later disappeared, surveillance footage, and eyewitness accounts which cannot be verified, and thousands upon thousands of tips called into police, which point in a myriad of directions, from murder to sex slavery to overseas abductions. In what can only be described as a deeply disturbing and heartbreaking case of 2 young children disappearing, there are both endless suspects and no suspects. The questions continue to remain unanswered, and even the family itself has divided over the topic, with one camp supporting Tracy, and the other believing that something suspicious happened and she may know more. Thankfully, due to the efforts of the girl's aunt, their names remain in the public eye, and each year, on the anniversary of their disappearance, a candlelight vigil is held in hopes of stirring up new leads and information. What happened to Tianda and Diamond Bradley? Could they have been abducted and are still living today? Or is the truth much more terrible and tragic? This is Trace Evidence, Episode 55, The Disappearance of Tianda and Diamond Bradley. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today, I examine the perplexing and heartbreaking disappearance of Tianda and Diamond Bradley. It's a frustrating story with a lot of questions and very few answers. Before moving into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focusing on a different unsolved case each week. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcatcher. If you have questions, comments, or case suggestions, email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at traceevpod, on Instagram at traceevidencepod, or join the Facebook discussion group simply by searching for Trace Evidence. You can visit the website at trace-evidence.com for full episodes, transcripts, social media links, merchandise, and much more. Trace Evidence is also on Patreon, so if you'd like to support the show, please visit patreon.com/traceevidence, where you can get rewards such as stickers, pins, and commercial-free episodes. There's also a PayPal donation link on the website for those of you who don't wish to go through Patreon. This show is a complete one-man operation, and your support is greatly appreciated. As a final note, I'll be making an appearance on the Ignorance Was Bliss podcast later this week, so I'd highly recommend giving it a listen for some insight into the show and true crime in general. Today we examine the 2001 disappearance of 10-year-old Tianda Bradley and her 3-year-old sister Diamond. This is a case which is still active today, though little has been uncovered in the past 17 years. A number of police, private investigators, online detectives, and family members have searched high and low and all around the world for answers as to what may have happened that fateful day in July. This is episode 55, The Disappearance of Tianda and Diamond Bradley. Tianda Z. Bradley was born on January 20th, 1991, to her mother, Tracy Bradley. Born in Chicago, Tianda was raised in her family's apartment located in the 3500 block of South Lake Park Avenue in Chicago's South Side. Tianda was third born, having two older sisters, Victoria and Rita. A quiet young woman, Tianda was described by many as being shy and reserved, at least when it came to dealing with strangers. She was very loving and welcoming to her family, but as is the case with many children, was exceptionally timid around individuals she didn't know. At the same time, Tianda was an energetic presence that could overcome almost any situation. When Rita was later asked to describe her sister, she responded, quote, "She was just the outspoken one of us all, even me. She knew right from wrong. Like if I did something, she'd be like, no, we weren't supposed to do that. I'm going to tell mom. She was very smart, real smart." End quote. Rita would go on to explain that Tianda was big into riding her bike, and while that was one of her favorite pastimes, it was dancing which really captured her soul. She could be frequently found dancing along to music, to her own singing, or even to pure silence if the mood struck her. With a defined sense of right and wrong and a penchant for fun and excitement, it would be Tianda who would be most excited 6 years later. When Tianda was 7 years old, on November 25, 1997, Tracy would give birth to another daughter whom she'd name Diamond Yvette. For the family, it quickly became apparent that Tianda looked upon Diamond as her responsibility, and the young girl frequently contributed to assisting with the care of her new, young sister. Diamond was a beautiful young child, playful and free-spirited. Rita would later say, quote, "Diamond would jump from couch to couch, and she had these dark eyes that used to scare everybody." End quote. The early years, for both children, are somewhat subject to debate, as there hasn't been a great deal of information shared publicly. There's also a lot of debate and speculation revolving around specific details, mainly the father of the children. Diamond's father has been listed as a man named George Washington, but in regard to Tianda, there's some confusion. Many articles report that a man of North African, possibly Moroccan descent, was actually paying child support on one of the children, believed to be Tianda, until 2001, when he was informed that he wasn't her biological father. Other places have listed this unnamed man as being of Middle Eastern descent and gone on to say that it's unclear which of the two girls he was actually paying child support towards. I'll touch on all of that a bit later. There's also another George in play here, reportedly a friend of Tracy's who lived in the apartment complex and often helped out babysitting. His name was also George, George Sr. The confusion between the two Georges will complicate matters quite a bit during the later part of the investigation. Regardless of a father, the children lived with and were raised by Tracy. Another important figure in the lives of the children was Sheila Bradley Smith, the great aunt. The children were raised in a caring environment, surrounded by strong women with a deep-seated love for them. A blue-collar upbringing in Chicago can certainly have its challenges. Tracy had help from family, including Smith and the girl's grandmother. Chicago is one of the largest cities in the United States, boasting a population of nearly 2.8 million residents, making it the third most populous city in the country. Chicago encompasses 234 square miles and sits in Cook and DuPage counties. Chicago has a complicated history in relation to crime statistics, with its murder rate ranking 16th, placing it higher on the scale than both New York and Los Angeles, though most of the violent crimes in the city are attributed to rival gangs battling over drug territory. There's also a highly complicated relationship between Chicago citizens and the police. A study conducted by Watchdog Group showed that, since 2004, Chicago has paid out more than $500 million to settle police misconduct cases. Obviously, this creates a tension between the police and its population, a tension which will certainly play a role in this case as it begins to unfold and suspicions are cast out. By the summer of 2001, Tianda was just 10 years old, and Diamond was 3, with her 4th birthday coming up that November. July was building up to be an exciting month for the family, as the girls had recently celebrated the 4th of July and were looking forward to their sister Victoria's birthday on July 7th. Unfortunately, in what can only be described as bizarre and disturbing events, neither Tianda nor Diamond would be able to celebrate their sister's birthday. Instead, just the day prior to the event, both girls would vanish seemingly into thin air, leaving behind a confusion of clues, a myriad of contradictory witness statements, and all manner of confusion. Their disappearance will create one of the largest hunts in Chicago history, and to this day, remains a haunting case which continues to remain in the minds of the family and investigators alike. On the morning of Friday, July 6, 2001, Tianda and Diamond were at the family's apartment. Their sisters, Rita, then 12, and Victoria, who would turn 9 the next day, were staying with the relative. Why Tianda and Diamond were not also staying with this relative has never been clarified. There has been some discussion that Rita and Victoria often stayed with this relative, but at this particular point, it's subject to a great deal of speculation. Stories contradict about this particular relative, though many articles examining the case have specified that it was their grandmother. Initially, it was alleged that Tracy was alone with her two daughters on that morning, though later that will turn out to be untrue. According to her original story, Tracy awoke sometime between 5 and 6 a.m. She had work that morning, and at the time, she was doing work for a summer camp, which required her to go to Robert Taylor Park. Her job consisted of aiding coordinators, as well as packing lunches for the campers. While this wasn't a glitzy job, and early mornings are never fun, it did afford her the ability to return home in the early afternoon. According to Tracy, when she left for work that morning, the girls were going to be left home alone. Tianda would be responsible for looking after her younger sister, and it seems like this wasn't the first time she'd have been in this position. The timeline here can be subject to some debate as well, with Tracy having been reported to have left the apartment that morning either at 6 a.m. or 6:30, though the majority pinpoint the later time as being accurate. Either way, according to Tracy, when she left the apartment that morning, both Tianda and Diamond were home and sleeping. What occurred over the course of the next few hours is unknown. Tianda was scheduled to attend a summer program that day, though she never made it and was marked absent. What exactly was going to happen with Diamond during this time is unexplained. Some have argued that she was going to accompany her older sister to the program, though how the children would arrive there is also a piece of the puzzle which seems unclear. Tracy states that she arrived home around 12:30 p.m. Again, this 12:30 time has been debated, with some saying that Tracy returned home as early as 11 a.m., but given some details from eyewitnesses, 12:30 does seem to be the approximate time. It's also important to note here that Tracy's story about her comings and goings, the timeline, and the events of that day are highly subject to speculation as, when speaking to investigators, her story changed multiple times. She later stated that her timeline was purposefully distorted because she was afraid that she'd be subject to criminal offense if she told authorities that she had left her 10 and 3-year-old daughters home alone. An interesting detail about Tracy's return home is that she didn't arrive alone. Tracy brought Diamond's father, George Washington, along with her, and according to her story, the two were planning to take the two young girls on a camping trip. The trip was allegedly planned to take them down to Lake Schaefer in Indiana, approximately 2 hours and 110 miles to the south, though this has become a major subject of controversy and speculation. Tracy has openly stated that they'd never gone camping before, so why they suddenly decided to make this trip seems unclear. Factor that in with the detail that the next day was Victoria's birthday, and many people find that this supposed camping trip doesn't exactly fit with the narrative. There has also been some speculation about Tracy and Washington's relationship at this point in time, with some believing that they were romantically involved, and others stating that they were simply both involved in raising Diamond. Tracy stated that, upon arriving home, she found that the girls weren't in the apartment. After searching all over it, she discovered a note. The note, supposedly written by Tianda, explained that the two girls were going to be visiting a nearby store and then proceeding on to the Doolittle School, located approximately a block from the apartment, which itself was found on East 35th Street and Lake Park Avenue. It wasn't exactly out of the ordinary for the girls to visit the Doolittle School, as they frequently enjoyed to play on the playground located there, and Tianda attended a summer school program they offered. Though how often these young girls were prone to, or allowed to, wander there or anywhere else by themselves seems to be up for debate. At this time, Tracy has said that she began looking for Tianda and Diamond by herself. According to reports of the time, she requested that George assist in the search, but instead, he chose to leave. Tracy did contact several other family members who began searching as well, including her mother. Tracy left the apartment and walked well over a mile, knocking on doors, checking throughout the neighborhood, at the school, the stores, and asking people she saw on the street if they'd seen the girls. According to Tracy's mother, when she asked if the police had been called, she was told no. If Tracy began this search as late as 1 p.m., she, at a minimum, waited 5.5 hours before calling the police and reporting the girls missing that evening at approximately 6:30 p.m. When the girls' great-aunt, Sheila Smith, later asked Tracy why she waited so long to contact authorities, she confessed that she was afraid she'd be arrested. Smith later said, quote, "Tracy was told by another family member who had some previous run-ins with DCSF that you should probably look for them, because if you call the police, DCFS, you know, they're going to probably put you in jail or try to take your kids totally." So that's the explanation I got from Tracy personally as to why she changed her story. End quote. This would be one of many statements Smith will make publicly over the years, and since this devastating day in July, Smith would become the strongest advocate for both Tianda and Diamond. When authorities arrived at the apartment, Tracy told them what had happened and gave them the description of the girls. She also provided them with the note that had allegedly been written by Tianda, though for investigators, they began to wonder if it was possible that this note could have either been written by a potential kidnapper, or perhaps had the kidnapper dictated the note and forced Tianda to write it. Smith felt immediately that the note was not written by Tianda. She was in possession of a note that Tianda had written months earlier, and she felt that it was impossible that these notes were written by the same person. In a later interview, Smith stated, quote, "No way she improved that much in 5 months," end quote. According to Smith, the notes were written in a completely different style, structure, grammar, and tone, and beyond that, it was not a usual practice for Tianda to leave notes behind. The note is definitely a curious area of this disappearance, and has been debated back and forth thoroughly ever since the first day. Police launched an immediate search of the area, as well as making the choice to pay visits to more than 100 known sex offenders living nearby. Within the first hours of the investigation, the amount of police officers continued growing, and the search was expanding dramatically. A rotating group of more than 100 detectives were assigned to the case, conducting searches of the sewers, abandoned buildings, bodies of water, garbage dumps, and even dumpsters. Everywhere they considered it a possibility that the children could have ended up, either by their own choice or at the hand of someone else. This was exceedingly important in those early moments, but unfortunately, they were already hours behind, and it wouldn't take long for their search to be conducted by flashlight and spotlight under the cover of night. Police began questioning Tracy, as well as other family members. All told, they would interview and re-interview more than 30 relatives, including grandparents in Wisconsin, but it was Tracy's story that they were having a hard time with. Initially, she told police that she had been home taking a nap, and when she'd woken up, she'd found the girls missing. This story disrupted the early stages of the investigation as police felt that had someone entered the home and abducted the girls, Tracy would have likely heard it. It wasn't until later that she told them she wasn't home, which changed the complexion of their investigation. When she told police that Washington had been with her that day, they found it odd that he elected to leave. The story became even stranger to them when Tracy confessed that Washington had actually spent the previous night at the apartment and was there in the morning too. While the two were engaged in a dispute over the question of his paternity, they were still engaging in some intimate encounters and had supposedly planned the aforementioned camping trip together. Due to the changing of her story, details which investigators found questionable, and what has generally been defined as an all-around lack of cooperation on her part, Tracy was quickly being pulled further and further under the microscope of suspicion. In one particular incident, when an officer approached her to discuss potential leads in the case, this resulted in Tracy shoving the officer and actually being cuffed and brought down to the station, though she was later released without charges. In the first 5 days of the investigation, Tracy was interviewed 4 times, and not for short periods. On Saturday the 7th, the day after the disappearance, she was questioned for 8 hours. For the next few days, the interviews would continue with 6 hours on Sunday, 8 hours on Monday, and another 5 hours on Tuesday. It wasn't long before Tracy made the choice to hire a lawyer, Andre Grant, who at the time was fighting an unrelated wrongful conviction case against the city of Chicago. Whether it was due to her lawyer's advice, her own frustration with the police focusing on her, or some unknown reason, Tracy did take steps which made the investigation more difficult. Firstly, Tracy wouldn't allow police to speak to her other daughters, Rita and Victoria. She also refused to give a writing sample to investigators, which they were seeking in order to compare it to the note that had allegedly been left by Tianda. They later acquired samples of Tianda's handwriting from her school, which would be studied by the FBI. Due to the perception of resistance, authorities requested that Tracy submit to a polygraph test, which she did. Tracy passed the polygraph, and while for some this helped dismiss some of the suspicion that had fallen over her, for others, it did little to shift their perspective. Reports would later emerge, suggesting that the FBI had presented the note and samples of Tianda's writing for handwriting analysis, and that it is believed that Tianda did in fact write the note, though whether or not she was coached or forced to do so remains unknown. On the other side of things, the search was turning up little in terms of Tianda and Diamond. Some local children spoke with authorities and claimed to have seen the girls, on the afternoon they vanished, outside of their apartment building playing and singing. While this was an important detail, The children's statements weren't considered exceptionally compelling, as they were unable to absolutely guarantee that they had seen the girls on Friday, and not the previous day. The sighting was reported to have taken place at approximately 12 p.m., which would mean that Tianda and Diamond were safe and playing approximately 30 minutes before Tracy arrived home. Sadly, this information remains possible, but unverified. There were also conflicting accounts, with other children saying that they saw the girls on the swings at the playground, and more still stating that they saw them walking towards Lake Michigan. For much of Monday the 9th and Tuesday the 10th, authorities spent a lot of time and resources searching a local woods known as Dan Ryan Woods. Tracking dogs were brought in to try and track down any scent which might lead them to Tianda and Diamond, though the reason for searching the woods seemed to be based more upon guesswork than any evidence pointing them in that direction. When asked about the search, Chicago Police Department spokesman Patrick Camden stated that it was an area where they felt a suspect might be likely to, quote, dump something, end quote. Two mounds of recently disturbed earth were located, though when they were examined, nothing was found. Tracking dogs led authorities to several garments of children's clothing, though these were determined not to belong to the girls. On Tuesday, police continued their second day of searching the woods when they received a call from a local minister. According to him, he'd had a vision of the girls' bodies being dumped in the Washington Park Lagoon. The fire department supplied divers who searched extensively, though recovered nothing. Later that night, family, friends, and law enforcement officers took part in a candlelight vigil in hopes of drawing attention to the case. Tracy attended and spoke with the media, stating, quote, "I'm wishing whoever got my kids just return my kids home," end quote. Camden, when asked about any tips or possible leads, responded, quote, "We're in a situation where if somebody calls in with something, we've got to follow up on it, even if it seems out of the ordinary. We don't want to find out later something we overlooked could have led us to these two children," end quote. On Wednesday, the 11th, Chicago police informed the media that they had reached out to the FBI for assistance, and that while they were indeed conducting the case as a missing person situation, they were also running a parallel criminal investigation. FBI spokeswoman Virginia Wright stated that the FBI were only involved in a missing persons case, as far as they knew. At this time, police withdrew officers from the woods search, moving on to other possibilities, while members of the Forest Preserve continued the search on their own. As the media latched onto the story, local news was covering the disappearance extensively, plastering Tianda and Diamond's images all over the television and newspapers. As a result of this, many tips began pouring in. These tips ranged from alleged sightings to supposed psychics claiming to know their location, and even to one caller who claimed that the girls were being held as sex slaves in a small Illinois town. Several callers made allegations against the man believed to be Tianda's biological father, the Moroccan who they argued had kidnapped the girls and removed them from the country. Police worked hard to track down every lead, but continued to hit dead ends. Police managed to speak with George Washington within the first few days of the investigation, and according to all reports, he agreed to meet with them and discuss the disappearance voluntarily. While the direct line of questioning to what he was subjected has never been revealed, authorities did request permission to search his home and vehicle. At the time, Washington drove a Lincoln, and when they swept it for evidence, they were able to recover several hairs located in the trunk. Forensic testing revealed that the hairs could have belonged to either girl or even Tracy herself. A detective on the case later, when discussing the hairs, explained that while it was initially encouraging, the lack of clarification in terms of who the hairs belonged to left them with little they could do. In addition to that, there was no way to prove that the hairs hadn't been left behind at a different time under non-criminal circumstances. It simply wasn't enough evidence to move forward, though Washington, due to the hairs found in the Lincoln, and a receipt would become a suspect in police officers' minds, though not officially. Washington was reported to have been in possession of a receipt from the Home Depot, showing that shortly before the disappearance, he had purchased gloves, garbage bags, and bleach. When Smith was later asked about this report, she responded that it was, quote, "very suspicious," end quote. Suspicions were being cast in all angles just a few days into the investigation. Local rumor was circulating that the disappearance had been executed by someone close with the family, and perhaps even with the assistance of a family member. Tracy was being batted around in the public forum, with many believing that she knew more about the disappearance than she was sharing. Interestingly, while Tracy was being questioned by investigators on a particular day, her cell phone was left in the possession of a family member. Smith stated, on multiple occasions, that she was present, along with 10 other family members, when one of them opened Tracy's phone and decided to check her voicemail. There, they found a message left by Tianda on the morning of the disappearance. According to their statements, the voicemail said, quote, "Mama, this is Tianda. Mom, pick up the phone. George is at the door. Can I open the door? He said we're going to Jules to pick up the cake there. We're going to pick you up from work." End quote. The voicemail raised a lot of questions. Primarily, who was the George that Tianda was referring to? There were two possibilities: George Washington and George Sr. that lived in the building, who sometimes babysat the girls. Initial suspicions pointed towards Washington, as authorities felt that mentioning the cake suggested the connection to Victoria's birthday. At the same time, this seemed to conflict with the story about taking the girls camping. Multiple family members have pointed out the fact that Tianda was very shy around people she didn't know well, implying that it was more likely to have been George Washington, someone who wasn't around a great deal. Whereas if it was their babysitter, Tianda may have been less likely to call about it since she knew him. Then again, how much sense does it make that Tianda would call her mother for permission to even open the door, but also felt perfectly normal about leaving behind a note that they were leaving? The situation made less sense the more you examined it. In terms of the voicemail, somehow, and no one has ever explained exactly what occurred, it was lost. Whether that means that it was played and they failed to save it, or if someone purposefully deleted it, we simply don't know. When Smith was asked about the voicemail disappearing, she only replied, quote, "Me and God know that," end quote. Many have taken this to mean that Smith felt that the voicemail was purposefully deleted by Tracy, as she has been very outspoken about the fact that she doesn't believe Tracy's story about the day the girls vanished. However, this remains another mysterious aspect of this case, for which there are no clear answers readily available. The suspect list continued to grow, and authorities ultimately interviewed more than 1,100 people in relation to the disappearance. Unfortunately, due to a lack of evidence and information, ruling people in or out was nearly impossible. Detective Ed Carroll, later when asked about probable suspects, responded, quote, "Almost every case I've ever worked, especially the violent crimes, you're always able to either include someone or exclude someone. And this was the only case I worked in my entire career where I couldn't exclude or include anyone. It was extremely frustrating because we just didn't know who did what," end quote. The next development in the case came as a result of the voicemail. Officers went to the store, known as Jules, to examine surveillance footage from the day of the disappearance. On July 12th, they revealed that the footage showed two young girls fitting Tianda and Diamond's description, but that they needed Tracy to come down and view the footage for verification. In a bizarre turn of events, which only lent more suspicion to Tracy, she refused to view the tape initially. A spokesman for the FBI, Ross Rice, stated to reporters, quote, "We're not sure who's on it, and we want the mother to look at it and see if it's her daughter's." End quote. According to FBI agents in contact with the media, they had brought the tape to Tracy's apartment, but were met with resistance. In their statements, multiple agents explained that when they knocked on the door, family members refused to open up and allow them access, or to even view the tape. Tracy's lawyer, when asked about the viewing of the tape, stated, quote, "My client is physically, emotionally, and mentally exhausted. There are a number of family members willing and able to view the tape at any time." End quote. The next day, Tracy showed up at a police precinct on the south side requesting to view the tape, an apparent change of heart from the previous day. However, at this point, the tape was in full possession of the FBI and was no longer in the hands of Chicago police. Ultimately, an arrangement was made for Tracy to meet with the FBI and view the tape. The meeting was scheduled to take place on Thursday, July 13th. There have been reports that Tracy, when she first learned of the tape, openly stated that she didn't believe the tape would show the girls, despite not having seen it. When the tape was finally viewed by Tracy and other family members, it was confirmed that the video did not show either Tianda or Diamond. Frustration on both the part of authorities and the family was growing, but nothing could be found which would indicate what had happened to the girls, where they could possibly be, and sadly, whether or not they were still alive. Time began passing, and the further away things moved from the date of the disappearance, the more the case began winding down. Police had searched more than 5,000 buildings, questioned over 1,000 individuals, consulted with multiple psychics, as well as launching searches across land and water, as well as utilizing planes and helicopters for aerial searches, and yet they had discovered nothing. Slowly, officers assigned to the case began to dwindle, and media attention started to dry up. America's Most Wanted ran a segment on the disappearance, and while it produced a momentary surge in tips, they led only to dead ends and quickly fizzled out. Years began passing, and while the search for Tianda and Diamond continued, it seemed less and less likely that answers were coming. Later, in 2001, the year they vanished, private investigator Jim Miller learned about the case. Moved by the story, he wanted to contribute to the efforts and, knowing the situation of the family, offered to work on the case without charge. During the course of his investigation, Miller traveled extensively in hopes of tracking down leads. Under the belief that it was possible they had been taken across the country, Miller traveled to California to track down witnesses who alleged to have seen them, though it didn't lead to any confirmed sightings. Outside of the United States, Miller traveled to Mexico, Belize, and even pursued the theory that Tianda and Diamond may have been taken to Morocco. Miller spent time in Morocco questioning people, and ultimately felt that it was unlikely that they had been taken there. Family members later expressed that they didn't believe the Morocco theory either, and that they had been in touch with the man many have alleged may have kidnapped the girls. In 2007, an email was sent to Sheila Smith. The email read in part, "This is Tianda," with "is" being spelled I-Z. Through the email, she was linked to a MySpace page which contained a photo of a young woman who bore a striking resemblance to age-progressed photographs of Tianda, which had been created by the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It was difficult to deny the similarity, and the family agreed. Smith later said, quote, "When some of the children in the family saw the photo, they immediately asked if we'd found Tianda. The resemblance is just that strong. If it's good enough for the children to think it's her, it's good enough for us." End quote. Smith felt that not only did the girl look like Tianda, but that she had similar scars, and also held herself in a similar manner. Private investigator Miller felt the similarity was strong enough that this could be the first major break in the case. In order to work to somehow verify this, a Houston-based forensic artist, Lois Gibson, was given 3 images of the girl from the MySpace page to do a comparison against 5 images of Tianda from 6 years earlier. Gibson later stated, quote, "I tried to find out what I could see that would say that it wasn't her. I didn't want to build up any false hope. I went over every feature and then went, oh my God, it's her." End quote. This gave a lot of hope to the family, and Smith later stated, quote, "This is the first time I've been able to laugh in 7 years. This is going to be even better when we find them. Chicago is going to have a party." End quote. In early 2008, the Chicago police spoke to the media and explained that, unfortunately, authorities disagreed with the forensic artist. Monique Bond, a spokeswoman for the Chicago Police Department, stated, quote, "When detectives obtained these images in 2007, they investigated IP addresses, obtained computers, but nothing provided any substantive lead or concrete information that would indicate that this was a Bradley sister. Independent of the forensic expert from Houston, we would operate under the assumption that the images may be Tianda. Unfortunately, nothing concrete was determined. This case is and has been a top priority for the Chicago Police Department to the degree that we have a detective assigned to the case full time." End quote. In May of 2008, Jeff Smith, a California man, came forward and explained that the girl depicted on the MySpace page was in fact his daughter and not Tianda Bradley. It was a devastating blow to the family, and while they were heartbroken, they sought additional proof. FBI agents operating in California explained that Smith had agreed to provide DNA for them to test, but that everything seemed to be in order, and there was little doubt that he was the father of the girl in the image. Smith was shattered, stating, quote, "If it's not Tianda to us, it will feel like losing her twice, but we'll accept it." End quote. When forensic artist Lois Gibson was asked about the false identification, she responded, quote, "This is the first time I've done a photo identification that hasn't worked." End quote. As more years passed, the family established a tradition. Each year, on the anniversary of the disappearance, they would hold a candlelight vigil. The vigils have been attended by family, friends, police, independent investigators, and strangers alike. Each of these vigils has become more somber than the last, with many feeling that each passing year is another blow to a family which has suffered greatly over the loss of these two sweet and innocent young girls. How many years must pass for them before answers can be provided? It's a question which continues to haunt them, and yet still, they hold out hope that the truth will be found. Smith has been a stalwart supporter and advocate for Tianda and Diamond. Almost every article, news story, and social media posting about them comes from her dedication and hard work to making sure they are not forgotten, and that they know, if indeed they are out there alive somewhere, that their family has never given up hope that they will return home someday. In 2011, Victoria Bradley gave an interview in regard to the disappearance. At the time, she was playing basketball at Washington High School on the East Side and was one of the star players. In the 10 years since her sisters had vanished, she hadn't spoken publicly about it. When asked about why she had kept quiet, she responded by saying, quote, "It's painful every time I talk about it. It's so hard because we're still waiting for them to come home. It has just been a hard time for me and my family." End quote. Victoria's birthday of July 7th is just one day after the girls vanished, and according to her, she hasn't celebrated a birthday since that day in 2001. It's too painful to imagine celebrating without knowing where Tianda and Diamond are. According to Victoria, the disappearance hit her hard, and for years afterward, she struggled in school and was afraid something might happen to her, too. It was in basketball that she found comfort and solace, and it has been like therapy to her. In early 2013, Sheila Smith received a disturbing email. According to the sender, she was living in Gary, Indiana, and had something she wanted to clear off her conscience. In the email, the woman explained that on the day Tianda and Diamond disappeared, her boyfriend wasn't home. Later that evening, he returned and she described him as appearing visibly shaken. When she questioned him, he allegedly told her that he had done something messed up and stated, quote, "She saw it. I had to kill her," end quote. Upon receiving the email, Smith reached out to the police, who were able to track the woman and get in contact. The Chicago police have been very tight-lipped about this incident, though when pressed about it, they explained that their investigation into the disappearance remains active, and as a result, only limited details could be provided. During an interview in March of 2013, Smith explained that the police had told her that the woman, who was initially cooperative, was no longer open to speaking with them or providing information. She went on to say, quote, "You know, she went out of her way to find us. She must have wanted us to know. She said God was weighing on her heart. Now God is weighing on my heart. I just want the world to know that all this time she's been holding this information. This case could possibly have been solved by now, and it's a shame she would have this information and not want to step forward with it," end quote. In July of 2016, the family organized another candlelight vigil. This time, it would occur on the 15th anniversary. 15 long years without answers, without proof, without seeing the girls for themselves. After all that time, much had changed, and while in their minds the family were still looking for two little girls, that simply wouldn't be the case any longer. If alive, Tianda would have been 25, and Diamond would have been 18. For Smith, it's hard to imagine, and she said, quote, "Even though they're adults, we still see them as children. We're stuck in 2001, end quote. The vigil provided a larger turnout than some of the others had, with hundreds arriving to show solidarity and support for the family. Rita, Tianda and Diamond's other sister, was also present at the event. Now 26, she remembers with haunting intensity the day she learned about the disappearance. She's now the mother of two herself, and explained how it affects her life to this day, and how she is exceedingly overprotective of her own children, considering what happened to her sisters. At the vigil, kits were handed out to everyone who attended, containing details of the case, descriptions and photos of the girls, including age-progressed photographs. Smith believed that out of the hundreds who attended, it would only take one to remember something, or to know something, to bring these years of pain to an end. A private investigator, P. Foster, who's been working on the case, stated, quote, "We do think it was someone that was very close to the family. Through the course of the last 15 years, we've turned so many documents over and under and upside down to the point we're just waiting for the next big one to come," end quote. Smith continued to maintain the search, to fight for answers and to do all she could to keep Tianda and Diamond's names alive. When asked how she does it and how long she will maintain this cause, she responded, quote, "As long as I have air in my body, I'm going to search for them until the day I die," end quote. A $10,000 reward remains in place for information which leads to the girl's location or the prosecution of a suspect. Investigator Foster doesn't always work on the case alone, and has actually worked alongside former Chicago detective Ed Carroll, who worked on the girl's case for more than 3 years until he retired. While Foster does much of the legwork at this time, he still returns to Carroll for counsel and assistance when he needs another mind to contribute from a different perspective. For Foster, it's a lifelong investigation that doesn't end until the girls are found. He told a reporter, quote, "It's fallen on our backs, and we're not going to give up on it. And I even told Ed, if it takes my children's children to find these girls, then that's what's going to be," end quote. Carroll agrees with Foster and has been very outspoken about the fact that he has never believed this was a case of a stranger abduction and that the girls were likely taken by someone they knew and trusted. Smith tends to agree, having said, quote, "Whoever it was knew that those girls were alone," end quote. Sadly, nothing new has been brought to the table since the early days of the disappearance, at least nothing which has led to an answer. Chicago police have explained multiple times that the case remains active and is still classified as a missing persons case due to a lack of evidence, though they do not believe that the girls left on their own. In fact, they tend to agree with previously quoted private investigator Foster that the girls were likely taken by someone they knew and trusted. So many years later, and there are no official suspects, and at the same time, everyone remains a suspect. In early 2017, Jim Miller, one of the private investigators who had dedicated 12 years of his life to work on the case, pro bono, passed away after a battle with cancer. His death was a harsh blow to the family, who felt that he had spent so much time and energy working to find Tianda and Diamond that no one else could simply pick up where he left off. The family mourned the loss, not just of an investigator, but of a man who gave willingly of himself and sacrificed much to try and aid them in their search. Initially, they were suspicious of him, but over the years he earned their trust and showed them how desperately he wanted to bring the girls home. Smith later said, quote, "Jim Miller and his team actually went over to Morocco when there were rumors that the girls were overseas. He went there. He went to California. There was just no boundary he wasn't willing to go to find Diamond and Tianda." End quote. In January of 2018, Tianda and Diamond's names were brought back into the headlines due to a tragic event. A young woman went missing from Spring Valley, Illinois on January 24th. Police later discovered that a man, Richard Henderson, had met her through the internet. On the 24th, Henderson picked up the young woman and took her on a drive into Putnam County. The young woman was reported missing, and through the investigation of cell phone pings, they were able to track her movements. Sadly, the 16-year-old was found deceased, having been stabbed to death. Her young life was taken away, and the police believed that Henderson had committed the crime, having murdered her after an altercation. Her name was Diamond Bradley. While tragic and devastating, her family was provided with answers and the ability to face the suspect in court. For Tianda and Diamond's family, they don't know if they will ever receive that chance at closure. It has been 17 years since Tianda and Diamond vanished, and over all of this time, despite the efforts of countless police, investigators, friends, family, and total strangers, what happened to the 10 and 3-year-old remains a haunting mystery. Over these years, many accusations have flown, rumors and speculation have run rampant. Out of that come three primary theories which are most popularly cited when exploring this disappearance. The first theory argues the possibility that Tianda and Diamond may have been abducted by a stranger, either after having left the apartment that day or having opened the door to someone they believe to have been a friend or relative. Many who support this theory argue that, were it someone who knew the children or spent time around the family, after all these years, it just seems unlikely that investigators wouldn't have cracked them or found all the information to connect them to the crime by now, leaving it open to the possibility that it was someone unknown in the investigation. The second theory suggests that the disappearance of Tianda and Diamond was, in some way, related to a friend or family member. Someone perhaps close to the family, or at least familiar with them. Supporters of this theory argue that Tianda's apprehension about strangers and her protective nature in relation to Diamond would have stopped her from opening the door to a total stranger, and that it's most likely that whoever may have been involved in the disappearance would likely have been someone that the children knew and felt safe with. The third and final theory suggests that Tracy and George Washington may both have been involved in the disappearance. Proponents of this theory point to inconsistencies in their stories, the plans to go camping, and many other details which, over the years, have cast a great deal of suspicion on the girl's mother and especially George Washington. 17 years ago, two beautiful young girls vanished from the face of the earth, and today, we're no closer to discovering their fate and whether or not they are still alive. If alive today, Tianda would be 27 and Diamond would be 20. Physical descriptions of the girls would serve somewhat useless today, as they certainly would look quite different after all these years, but some things would remain. Tianda has brown hair and brown eyes, and a small quarter-sized burn scar on her left forearm. Diamond has black hair and brown eyes, which are described as being deep-set. She also has a scar on the left side of her hairline. Someone knows what happened to these girls, and somewhere they harbor a dark and painful truth which could provide relief and honesty to a family which has suffered greatly. In the years since, they have moved forward. Victoria and Rita have grown up, living a life devoid of two sisters whom they loved and never forgot. Tracy moved away, a few years after the disappearance. She changed her phone number, withdrew from the public eye, and according to multiple sources, George Washington went along with her, and the two later had at least one other child together. Smith, too, moved away from Minneapolis, though she did call Tracy's old number and explained to the new owner that it was possible that someday their phone might ring and it could be Tianda or Diamond. She continued to work hard to keep the children alive, even if in name only. The disappearance of Tianda and Diamond is deeply mystifying. How two children could simply up and vanish without leaving a trace, without being seen, without anyone hearing anything. For many who examine this case, it seems quite clear that someone holds the answers. But unless they come forward, or new evidence can be found to force their hand, the disappearance of Tianda and Diamond Bradley remains open, unsolved, and 17 years cold. The disappearance of Tianda and Diamond Bradley is one of those cases that just sticks with you. It's always horrible to discuss a disappearance, but especially that of a child. In this case, two children went missing, and some 17 years later, were no closer to understanding the truth, nor discovering their location, than we were back in 2001. Surprisingly, for a case which initially received such extensive coverage, much of what exists today in articles, forums, and interviews amounts to little more than the regurgitation of the same facts over and over. There was once a website dedicated to the case, though it's no longer available, and much of the news reports which aired have gotten lost in the mix of countless stories of disappearances and other crimes. I was driven to cover this case due to the sensitive nature of it, but I had no idea when I first began that I would be coming into such an utter chaos of contradictions, rumors, and outright lies. You very much have a split here in terms of what is and is not a fact, with those who support one side of the family arguing that Tracy has been painted as a criminal and a suspicious person, and others arguing that her behavior and actions in the days, weeks, months, and even years after the disappearance could only lend her to further suspicion. Regardless of where your opinion may reside in terms of Tracy and George Washington, there is only one thing which is certain. We don't have the whole story, and what we do have doesn't make a lot of sense. Lately, I've seen this case popping up here and there. A few articles have recently been written to summarize that which is known, but progress has been slow, if not non-existent entirely. Many eyes have perused the files of this case, which in Chicago have accumulated more than 5 filing cabinets filled with tips, witness statements, rumors, interviews, and much more. All of that added together creates a cacophony of information which ultimately does little to supply the investigator with a clear indication of what happened. Due to the mass amounts of information which have been compiled, Many have taken it upon themselves to put forth theories which may help to explain the possibilities. The first of these theories examines the possibility that Tianda and Diamond were abducted by a total stranger. The stranger theory, for many investigators, was ruled out early as being unlikely. There are, though, two branches to this theory. Either that the girls were abducted while outside, or that someone entered the apartment and removed them. Beginning with the latter first, we have stories about Tianda's hesitance when it comes to strangers, her protective nature in regard to Diamond, and the unlikelihood that she would willingly open the door to a stranger. At the same time, we have to bear in mind that we're dealing with a 10-year-old, and it isn't entirely impossible that someone could have manipulated her into getting that door open. Of course, had this occurred, you'd think there would have been more information available. Signs of a struggle, unexpected fingerprints, screams, or some kind of noise. Yet as far as we are aware, none of that took place. It's possible this person, once granted access, could have produced a weapon and told Tianda to be quiet, but I doubt that same threat would have worked on a 3-year-old Diamond. She was more likely to cry or scream, but then again, in an apartment complex, how unusual is it to hear a young child crying out? The idea of a stranger entering the apartment does lend some credence to the note that was left behind, as most people feel it's unlikely that Tianda would have written it of her own volition. But if you were planning to abduct two children, who you knew were home alone, why would you have them leave a note at all? It seems more logical to just go, and leave her mother wondering where they could be. At the same time, the note did create a lot of confusion, and could have sent investigators in the wrong direction, so it's hard to say for sure. It's been said that the note was proven to have been written by Tianda, but again, that doesn't mean it's impossible that it was dictated to her. If it was, it was at least written by someone with familiarity with the children, or at least the neighborhood, as two nearby locations that they frequented were mentioned. Now, were it a total stranger, he or she would have to get the children from the apartment down to the street, where I imagine the suspect would have had some form of transportation waiting. All of this would have to be done without drawing attention, and then what? What was the motive behind it? It seems unlikely that someone who had no familiarity with the children whatsoever would simply elect to enter an apartment building, knock on a random door, and just hope that there were children to abduct inside. Not to mention, it was summer, and there were children playing outside in close by areas. If this was simply a matter of wanting to abduct some children, it probably would have been easier and less risky to try and grab one off the street and throw them in a car, more so than to enter a building where you don't know who might see you or who might even try to stop you. That brings us to the other angle of this theory, which is that the girls may have been abducted while walking alone on the street. To me, this seems a bit more likely given the nature of the circumstances. Under this belief, the girls would have left the note behind, exited the apartment building, and began walking. No one at the store remembers seeing them that day, and surveillance footage depicted different children. That seems to indicate that the abduction would have taken place on the walk towards the store and not on the way back to the apartment. Any number of things could have happened here. Someone could have up and grabbed the kids, pulling them into a vehicle. They could have been spoken to and perhaps manipulated into going along. We all know the stories of strangers telling children that their parent is hurt, or they have candy, or there's going to be a party. It's impossible to say what the approach might have been. Were it a snatch and grab, depending on the suspect's size and strength, it isn't exactly difficult to control a 3-year-old, and that's really all you'd need to do. Once in possession of Diamond, it seems unlikely that Tianda's going to abandon her sister to run for help, but then again, you never know. At the same time, were the suspect in control of Tianda, it wouldn't have been difficult to restrain her in a vehicle in some way, and then return immediately for the 3-year-old who can't really get away. But again, I'm left wondering why this person would want to take both children in the first place. Unfortunately, the world is a twisted place, and I may just lack the mentality to wrap my head around possible reasons for abducting children. A lot of theories in this case have been argued. Sex trafficking, drug trade, murder, slavery. All of these possibilities seem to exist, at least in this scenario, under the guise of coincidence. If it was a grab done on the street, then it seems unlikely to have been planned. This would mean that someone with the aforementioned intentions just happened upon the girls and saw them as easy targets. That being said, it's entirely possible someone was casing the area for children and just happened upon them. If this was a case of the children being taken in this way, it could have happened any time between 6:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. That's a 6-hour window of possibilities where we simply can't account for the girls' whereabouts. Knowing that Tracy didn't contact the police until 6:30 p.m., that leaves a total of 12 hours open. Anyone who abducted the girls could have traveled quite a great distance in 12 hours, or even 8. While both branches of this theory are open to possibility, we have other details which call them into question. The voicemail, for instance, certainly implies that someone other than Tracy saw them that morning. In the call, Tianda is alleged to have stated that George was there. There are three possibilities to this. George Washington, their neighbor George, who babysat them sometimes, or a total stranger who either pretended to be one of these men, Tianda confused him for one of these men, or who simply used the name George by coincidence. I'm not a big believer in coincidence. While a stranger abduction is possible, there's a lot of factors that would appear to argue against it. Tianda's shy nature, the voicemail, the lack of anyone hearing or seeing anything resembling a struggle, the utter randomness of finding two children on the street, or making the choice to knock on the door of a random apartment. Surely, someone could have been watching and known that Tracy was leaving. It could have been something as simple as a sick-minded individual seeing the children one day and then deciding to stalk the family and plan an abduction. All of these are possibilities, but given everything, a pure stranger abduction seems like the least likely of the theories involved with this case. This leads us into the second theory, that Tianda and Diamond were taken not by a total stranger, but perhaps by someone on the periphery of their circle, a family friend, or even perhaps a family member. The first name that comes to mind is George. While this name has been bandied about fairly evenly in relation to Washington, in this instance, it's the neighbor that will be addressed. All reports indicate that a man named George Sr., either living in the same building or nearby, had a relationship with the family, and oftentimes babysat the children. This would establish a trust between Tianda and George, which might make her more likely to open the door. If the voicemail transcript is accurate, then she directly stated the name George on that call. It's a little odd, though. Why would George Sr., the babysitter, coming to the door, lead Tianda to call her mother, asking if she could let him in? One would assume that Tianda was familiar with him and had been watched by him before. It seems likely that there wouldn't be as much hesitance about letting him in. Unfortunately, there isn't much information about this guy available. Even his last name seems to be somewhat of a mystery and leaves us with no choice but to speculate. If George had access to the children in the past, if he had been left alone with them before, why would he wait until a day where he wasn't in possession of them to commit the abduction? He'd have to know he was going to be a suspect if that happened. He'd have to be aware that police were going to question him, and so he'd need to create some sort of an alibi. What that alibi is, we simply don't know, but police have never directly stated anything to suggest that they believe he played a role in this. That doesn't mean they don't feel that way, but they've been quiet about it. While babysitter George is definitely a possibility, there's a lot of holes in this theory as well. According to the voicemail, this George implied that he was taking the girls to pick up a cake and then picking up Tracy from work. We can't know if the babysitter ever picked Tracy up in the past, but it seems unlikely that he would have been present for the birthday party and had any role related to picking up the cake. He may have had knowledge of Victoria's birthday, possibly even been told about it by one of the children, but would he have used that as an attempt to get her to open the door? Wouldn't it have been easier for him to simply say, "Hey, Tianda, it's George, and I'm here to babysit you"? It seems to me that he wouldn't need to concoct a story to earn Tianda's trust and to make her comfortable with the situation. It seems more likely that if he'd watched her before, he'd already have her trust. Then there's the stories about the man alleged to have been Tianda's father, this so-called Moroccan-born individual. Many have argued that, since he had previously paid child support, he may have been angry when he learned he wasn't the father and decided to abduct the children and flee to Morocco. This is certainly a possibility, and given the time when this occurred, some 2 months prior to the terror attacks of September 11th, airport security and checks weren't nearly as strong as they are now. It isn't impossible that a man could have gotten both children through the airport and onto a plane, though you'd think that airport records would show this occurring. On top of that, we don't know the relationship this man may have had with Tianda, if any at all. There's no reports of him visiting or spending time with her, so the idea that she would have been comfortable enough to open the door to him is a little strange. Then there's the question of motive, which applies to the babysitter as well. Why would either of these men want to abduct the children? The babysitter had access more often than not, so he certainly had plenty of chances to do so if that's what he wanted. The man from Morocco likely was in a similar position, at least in terms of planning. He would have had the ability to execute an abduction earlier, and we have no way of knowing how or if he'd be aware that the girls were home alone that day. The alone aspect of this adds a lot of suspicion because whoever did this either knew for a fact that the girls were alone, Tracy was at work, and Rita and Victoria were at a relative's, or this person got remarkably lucky on the day they decided to commit this crime. There's always the possibility that the abduction could have been committed by someone else who has never been named, perhaps a local or family member who has managed over these 17 years to keep their crime secret, but we have no way of narrowing that down to anyone in particular. The idea that the girls were taken by someone they knew isn't something which can be dismissed out of hand, and it carries more water than a total stranger abduction, but there are details which I don't feel fit the scenario. How could this person know they were alone? Why would the note be left? Why target Tianda and Diamond as opposed to Rita and Victoria? Also, it's important to remember, this person couldn't have been responsible for Tracy waiting 5 hours to call the police, changing her story multiple times, or going almost out of her way to be uncooperative. And that leads us to our third and final theory. Tracy Bradley has been the subject of speculation and rumor in this case since the first day police arrived on the scene. She lied to police about being home when the girls disappeared. According to her, this was to protect herself from losing her rights to her children, but at the same time, you'd think a parent would want to tell investigators everything they needed to conduct a better and more thorough search. She lied about being alone that morning, and then it later came out that not only had George Washington spent the night with her, but that he was there in the morning and drove her to work. What's curious about this is that when he picked her up from work and drove her home, he chose to leave rather than help her look for the children, one of which, by the way, was his own daughter. Tracy's accounting of events can hardly be trusted, and the last time anyone saw the girls prior to the day of their disappearance was the early afternoon of the day before, when their grandmother saw them. For many, this opens up the possibility that the girls didn't disappear on the morning of July 6th, but may in fact have disappeared during the late night or possibly very early morning hours. According to several statements, George Washington didn't come to Tracy's apartment at a normal time. In fact, several reports suggest he arrived somewhere around 2 a.m. While this may be steadily in line with the theory that they were having a sexual relationship, it also lends possibility that his arrival was in relation to something else. The voicemail tends to cancel out the possibility of the abduction taking place at any time other than the morning of the 6th. In that call, Tianda specifically named the man at the door as being George. We don't know what the relationship was exactly between Washington and Tracy, so if it was a matter of him engaging in intimate encounters and little more, this might explain Tianda's hesitance, as he may not have been around much. According to Tracy's own statements, The girls were asleep when she left that morning, and if Washington didn't come over until 2 a.m., they may not have even known he was there. How often this may have occurred, we don't know, but George would have known the girls well enough to be aware of the birthday, and utilizing the story about the cake to get them to open the door, that's a possibility. There's also the detail about this alleged George telling Tianda that they were going to pick Tracy up from work, which is something Washington had done before and did that day. In terms of Tracy and Washington, there's a number of factors which are disconcerting. First, we have the story about the camping trip. I've never been able to wrap my head around this one. So, your daughters are super excited to celebrate their sister's birthday the next day, and you plan, on a whim, to go on a camping trip, which you've never done before. There's never been any accounting of camping equipment found, either. No tents, sleeping bags, supplies of food and drinks. If indeed this was a camping trip, it was definitely spur of the moment, with little attached to suggest it was planned in any way. Then there's the curiosity about why Victoria and Rita would have been babysat at a relative's house, while Tianda and Diamond stayed back at the apartment. Perhaps this was something that happened a lot, but it's an odd coincidence to imagine that these two just happened to not stay with this relative when Tracy knew she had work and that they'd be left alone. I simply can't make sense of that, and there's never been an explanation supplied which could. Then there's all the details about what happened that day. Tracy went to work, and police have verified that she was there. While she's at work, Washington is apparently buying garbage bags, gloves, and bleach. Sure, he could have been cleaning up, I suppose, but it's not that great for his story to have that receipt the same day the girls vanished. Then, whatever he was planning to do with those items, he goes and picks up Tracy from work in the afternoon. So, sometime between 6:30 a.m. and 12 p.m., Washington makes that purchase, does whatever he's doing, and then picks up Tracy and drives her home. When they discover that the girls are missing, while Tracy decides she needs to search, Washington determines that he would rather leave. Honestly, there is no way for me to tell you those details where it doesn't sound suspicious. During the course of the investigation, Tracy is resistant to cooperating with police, which may be understandable if she felt like she was being labeled as a suspect, but you'd imagine that you would come into conflict with your own overwhelming desire to locate your children. Why she refused to allow them to speak to Rita and Victoria, why she wouldn't supply a handwriting sample, but then was willing to take a polygraph, makes little sense as well. It feels almost as if she didn't know what she was doing, and that's possible if she was lying, but it's also possible if she was purely mentally out of control with grief over the disappearance of Tianda and Diamond. In the years since this terrible crime occurred, Tracy changed her phone number, moved away, and continued a relationship with Washington that resulted in the birth of at least one more child. It's also been stated by family members that she also maintains a close relationship with George, the former babysitter. Many members of her own family call her accounts of that day into question and wonder what the possibilities are that either Tracy was involved or simply knows more about what happened than she has said. Washington definitely sets the radar off when it comes to bizarre and suspicious behavior, and Tracy's connection to him seems to indicate that she may have felt something strong enough for this man to have ignored warning signs about the disappearance. When it comes down to what we actually have in this case in terms of hard evidence, there isn't much, but what does exist seems to point in one direction, at least in my opinion. We have hair found in Washington's car, which could be Tracy's, Tianda's, or Diamond's. While that isn't much, it's somewhere to begin. We have the note, which some believe was normal for Tianda to have written, and others feel may have been coached to her. We have the voicemail, which has since disappeared, but police confirmed that the name George was said on that voicemail. There was the mention of a local store, of picking up a cake, and of picking up Tracy from work. Washington did in fact pick Tracy up that day. We have a receipt indicating the purchase of gloves, garbage bags, and bleach. So ultimately, we have a couple of possible scenarios here. Either Washington dropped off Tracy at work, bought his supplies, then did some cleaning, or planned to, picked her up from work and then decided he didn't feel like looking for his missing daughter, or we have a man who was unaccounted for on the day two children vanished, children whom he knew were alone, and he's out there somewhere with gloves, garbage bags, and bleach while they're vanishing from the face of the earth. Maybe these were his camping supplies. Tracy tells a bunch of different stories, has confrontations with police, and in the end elects to leave the area and remove herself completely from the incident while moving forward with her life with Washington, the very man who she'd been in a paternity conflict with for quite a while leading up to the disappearance. There's certainly a lot of smoke there, but there's also some fire. While we have nothing which can positively prove what happened on July 6, 2001, what we do know is that someone is not telling the whole story. Someone has the answers as to what happened, someone was involved in the disappearance of these two young girls, and while the police have never officially listed anyone as a suspect, there is only one person they have spoken to more than anyone else, and that person is Tracy Bradley. Among all of the theories circulating around this case, this certainly seems like the one with the most foundation, but that doesn't necessarily make it true. Whatever happened to those two sweet and innocent young girls has remained hidden for 17 years now, and what lives they may have led have been stolen away from them. Perhaps something will change, or someone will come forward. Maybe someone will remember something, or notice a clue which has been ignored previously. Maybe Tianda and Diamond are still alive out there somewhere, not knowing that they're even missing. Or perhaps a much darker truth exists, which is yet to be uncovered. There are many potential suspects, and few answers. Sheila believes that every man who was friendly with Tracy, and who had access to the girls, and knowledge that they may be alone that morning, should be thoroughly questioned and administered polygraphs. Perhaps, if that ever happens, we may find out exactly what occurred that July day 17 years ago.
Case update.
In May of 2019, a Texas woman emerged claiming to be Tianda Bradley. The woman began texting a family member claiming that she had been abducted by a family friend. However, while the texter knew some pertinent details, she lacked a scar that Tianda was known to have. The family hired a private investigator to determine what the truth was. In late May, the Bradley family released a statement that the woman claiming to be Tianda was lying. In part, Tianda and Diamond's great aunt, Sheila Bradley Clark, told CBS News, quote, "Unfortunately, the information provided on social media from this group of scammers are not the missing Diamond or Tianda Bradley," end quote. Unfortunately, the sisters remain missing and there have been no major developments in the case over the past 19 years. If you're interested in finding more information about the disappearance of Tianda and Diamond Bradley, there are many websites, forums, and news articles available which discuss this case. If you have any information about the disappearance of the Bradley sisters, please contact the FBI, Chicago Police, or your local police. You may also contact the tip line for the private investigation firm still working on this case by calling 847-579-9771. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, message me on Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, or comment in the Facebook group. I want to give a special thank you to Patreon producers Lynn Merschel, Diane Dyson, Sarah Burrow, Krista Colvin, and Kate Alexander. Your support makes this podcast possible. If you're interested in supporting Trace Evidence, visit patreon.com/traceevidence. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate and review the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you're using. The more ratings and reviews the show gets, the more people are able to hear these unsolved cases. For more information about other cases, transcripts, media, and more, please visit the website at trace-evidence.com. Later this week, I'll be appearing on the podcast Ignorance Was Bliss, where I'll be sitting down to have a talk about true crime, some personal thoughts, and maybe even a little psychology. If you're interested, you should definitely check it out, and I'll be sharing the links to that episode when it becomes available. Today, I'm going to end the episode with a promo for Ignorance Was Bliss, so you can get a taste of what it's like. I want to thank you for listening to this episode, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.
That's horrible.
That's true.
So strange.
Usually.
I can't imagine what that's like.
Do you want to?
That could never happen to me.
It might.
Lock him away. He's pure evil. Or insane.
Or human. My name's Kate. I have worked as a forensic psychologist, as well as in prisons and as a crisis clinician. My job was to figure out who gets locked up and who gets a key. To find the humanity in inhumane situations. So, are you sure you really want to know?
Yeah, maybe.
Because by the end of the episodes, you just might end up thinking...
I felt better before I knew that.
You can find me at IWB Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, sometimes Instagram, or you can email me at IWBpodcast@gmail.com.